Solomon Grundy, born on Monday, christened on Tuesday, married on Wednesday, took ill on Thursday, worse on Friday, died on Saturday, buried on Sunday. And this is the end of Solomon Grundy. Good fun being a parent. You learn all kinds of interesting things as you read your children's books. I've learned from this little book about thistles too. Cut thistles in May. They grow in a day. Cut them in June. That is too soon. Cut them in July. Then they will die. Just thought if you're travelling to Scotland, you might like to know. Suggested last week that when we read the book of Ecclesiastes, we have advantages both for the Christian and the non-Christian alike. The advantage of stripping away the false values of the secularist worldview, the worldview which says there is nothing in this world other than God, other than the world. There is no God, there is no supernatural, that there is only life under the sun. And our author moves from that worldview to the worldview that there is a God, and he compares and contrasts the two, basically by showing the hopelessness of life under the sun, life without God. And tonight, in chapter 3, we come to the subject of time. Now, for centuries, people have puzzled about time. Some, of course, have entered into fairly deep and speculative philosophy on the nature of time. Maths and physics and all kinds of areas can move into the subject of time. But man has pondered it from as long as they've been here, noticing the changing fortunes of tide and time, noticing the ever-increasing speed with which our lives seem to pass away. Every Christmas seems to come faster than the previous one. And unconsciously, and sometimes consciously, we all adopt a view of what takes place in time. We could view it, like we did last week, as a cycle. The sun rises, the sun sets. I remember meeting a grocery lady down at Hurstville Grove who was discussing this deep philosophical point with me, and she sold me some cornflakes. That life's just a matter of being born and getting old enough to be married, to have children, to see them grow up before you die, while they go through the same process 25 years behind you. But that kind of cycle view of life, that everything's just going around and round and getting nowhere, was worked out much more sophisticatedly by the Stoics, who believed that the whole world was moving in a huge circle of time, so that every 4,000 or 5,000 years you would reappear and you would be sitting listening again to this sermon. Now there's a thought, isn't it? What a possibility, eh? It's like an action replay delayed and enlarged. But there are other views of time. Few people would hold that Stoic ideal now. Part of the whole Marxist viewpoint, isn't it, coming out of Hegel and idealism, is a historical determinism, that the world is programmed along a certain time system, a certain schedule, whereby in thesis and antithesis and synthesis you press forward bit by bit, like a yo-yo going up a string, up and down and up and down, but each time going a little bit more in one direction until ultimately you come to the great state of whatever it may be. But it will be the state. Some, of course, reject the idea that we are going anywhere like that. There's a very thick volume of history that I remember acquiring early in the end of leaving school, a man called H.A.L. Fisher, called The History of Europe, in which he says in his introduction that he can never see any pattern or rhyme or reason to the development of the mankind, and that it all is just a meaningless meander. That's how the book reads, too. That it's gone nowhere, it's going nowhere, and en route we are nowhere. We're just happening to be where we are at the moment for no particular reason. Others will see that there is a direct development taking place. That it's not all just wandering around like that. That life is going somewhere. And it seems to me that the optimistic humanists in our community have this view. That things are getting better. And that is a series of words that you'll catch it for you. Evolution, progress, development. They are lovely words that we like to use today. Evolution and development, we cannot help but think of as being on the upward plane. If I asked you to draw it on a piece of paper for you, draw a line which demonstrated development or evolution, you would most likely be drawing it upwards because we always think it goes up. But there's no reason for that at all, is there? Developments can be bad developments, can't they? And evolution can, rather than lead to a higher and better and more sophisticated and more wonderful, could actually lead to something far, far worse than previously. But we tend to think that, well, we are somewhere and getting somewhere better, that something good is happening, that there is a beginning from which we have come, Big Bang or otherwise, and there is an end to which we are going. And it's not like T.S. Eliot, a whimper. In chapter 3, you've got a different model of time here in Ecclesiastes. Time is like a pendulum, oscillating. There's a time for this, there's a time for that. There's a time for everything, every activity under heaven. This then is the point of the poem that we have in verses 1 to 8. Not all days are the same as each other. Not all times are the same as each other. The days do not drag on identically with each other. Sometimes there are times for sowing, sometimes for reaping, sometimes to tear down, sometimes for building. There are fitting moments for the occasions. There are appropriate actions for each occasion. There is a right time for action. There is another time that is not the right time for action. Indeed, the opposite action might be the appropriate one. Now might be the moment for sitting, in a few moments' time might be the moment for standing. And after that, there might be another time for sitting. And if you actually try and do it at the wrong time, you'll be very self-conscious. There is an propriety, there is an appropriateness about certain activities at certain times, and therefore life is not a meaningless succession of meaningless events. How can it be true that we go nowhere and do nothing? Here is meaning. Here surely is indication that we actually have some purpose, some meaning, some value in life, because we know that certain things are wrong in their time. Certain things don't fit. Certain things are out of time, are out of tune. But yet in verse 9 he says, what does the worker gain from his toil? It actually runs back to chapter 1 verse 3. It's the same which he's asked there, with the same note of pessimism. Because these great moments, these great timely occasions that we may have, he says, are like the swing of the pendulum. They are just oscillations. They actually get to nowhere. For the very thing which is appropriate in one moment is the thing that you will want to reverse in another moment. Marvellous to be building now, but that building we will need to tear down on another day. And so what is the sum total of what we've got? We've got a building that's gone up and we've got a building that's come down, and what have we got? We've got labour that has been spent for nothing. It reminds you of the inner city area of our city at the moment, doesn't it? The building and the tearing down, and the building and the tearing down, and the building and the tearing down, except for the Heritage Commission, which insists on us retaining some of the most useless of the varieties we've put up. Now, to describe life, then, as a meaningless succession of events is inadequate, because there are some very meaningful events in meaningful moments. There are different times, there are different events. Meaning and value is in them. And yet, to find profit in them is inadequate, because in the end, they add up to nothing. And so time is an unusual indication of our situation. But more than that, the way in which he looks at time, in its kind of temporary nature, creates for us a tyranny, a terrible situation, a horrible thing really. It is the burden that God has laid upon men, mentioned in verse 10. Time hedges us into a terrible captivity. This, by the way, is the time to listen. Everything, we're told, is beautiful in its time. We know that. God has made everything beautiful in its time. If you've got your timing correct, then the thing flows sweetly. Those of you who have ever enjoyed batting at a cricket wicket will know that timing is of the very essence of the game. That if you time the ball quickly in your shot, it scoots to the boundary so fast the fieldsman can't get across to cover it. If you mistime it, then you can put enormous amounts of energy into the activity, and it'll still dribble out to silly mid-off. It's just an irrelevance if you don't time it properly. Timing is a very critical area. And it's like that in life in general. There is a timing that is important. To go to war can be a very timely thing to do. Can be a right thing to do. Even the war can in that sense be said to be beautiful. If it comes at the right time, you think, well, how can that be so? I mean, we're a pacifistic generation, aren't we, if ever there was one. How can it ever be right to go to war? I think it was right to go to war against Hitler. We're going to need some fairly serious revision of historical research for me to ever change my mind on the view that it was right to go to war against Hitler. That was a timely war. I can think of others that were not so timely, but I can think of that one as being a timely one. It was a very helpful one. Even war can be beautiful in its time. That's not to say that everything that was done in the Second World War was beautiful for any moment. Sowing can have its beauty, reaping can have its beauty, scattering, gathering, tearing, mending, everything can be right if it's in its right time. So God has given to the man this sense of time, this sense of timeliness, this sense of the propriety of an action, this sense of rightness about what we are doing, and also a sense of wrongness about it, the sense of impropriety, the sense of inadequacy in an action that is taking place. There is a time to kiss. There is a time when it is totally inappropriate to be kissing. And we can see even in that small action that man has a value, has a sense of the rightness, has a sense of eternity. For where do the values come but from outside the situation in which we are? We have within us that sense, which that instinct, that idea, that feeling that there is more to life than just the actions that are involved. That there's more to life than just day after day after day after day. That there is more to life than just going on existing as a bunch of matter twitching. That there's more to life than just living. Man has within himself the sense of eternity. And his perception of the propriety of time is the perception that there is more to life than just the passing of time, that there is eternity. God has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity into the hearts of man. We perceive this eternity, but yet while we have a sense of the eternal, we cannot work it out. We can't understand it. We can't fathom it. It doesn't make sense to us. Because we can't see the beginning and we can't see the end. We cannot see the way out. It's a little bit like being in a maze. Take, for example, that Hampton Court maze, of which I've seen pictures but never actually been to. There is a maze made of hedges, just too tall for you to see. Beautifully trimmed. Magnificently. So there's a series of alleys that you walk through and all you can see is the hedge on either side. And there's some trees which if you look up over the hedges you can see which are the centre part of the maze. And the aim of the game is to walk into the maze and to find your way to the tree and having found your way to the tree to turn about and walk back out again. But en route all you can ever see is the hedge. Neatly clipped. The laneways clearly marked. And the numerous blind alleys, carefully laid out and cleverly deceptive. You may actually be able to look up and see things beyond the maze, like the buildings. Not having been there, I don't know if that's possible. But there is a situation of what life is like, he says. Here we are inside something which indicates that there's more to life than just what we're in. Somebody has been here before to have clipped it as neatly as they can, and we can't find them, so presumably they got out. Somebody, it actually shows clear signs of man's handiwork. I mean, hedges just don't grow as neatly as I can never get them to grow that neatly. They've always had to trim them wherever I've been in. That's why we've always poisoned them and taken them down. It takes so much work. Someone has been clearly here fiddling with this. Indeed, somebody has been here thoughtfully enough to lay it out in the format and structure it in. I have indications that I'm in something which shows there's somebody outside there. There's more to life than just the situation I'm in. But the trouble is I don't know where to start and I don't know where to finish. I'm just in the laneway. And wherever I walk, what do I see? What can I see? Another blind alley. And so what am I supposed to do about it? Sit down in pessimism? That is one alternative, but that's not the alternative suggested here. I know, he says in verse 12, that there is nothing better for man for men than to be happy and do good while they live. That's what I should do. I should enjoy the walk as I go through the maze. Be thankful to God that I've actually got the opportunity for exercise, walking up and down all these blind lanes. Thankful to God that I can see the beauty of the hedge itself and the neatness with which it has been clipped. Thankful for God for many of the good things that happen. I should enjoy myself as I wander around there. It's a terrible thing to be in a maze and to regret that you're there and to be unhappy and miserable as well. If it's bad enough you're lost, let alone not to enjoy yourself being lost. Now, if you're lost, enjoy yourself. May as well get the most out of it. After all, you're getting your money's worth, aren't you? I mean, if you went straight to the spot and then straight back out again, you wouldn't have seen most of the maze, whereas you've got the opportunity of seeing lots of it. Like the bad golfer, he always gets more money than those professionals. They take so few strokes, they don't get their money's worth out of a round. And they hardly ever see the course, at least not the rougher bits of it. Well, here is what we should be doing in life then. Enjoy the trivia while you've got it, because that's all you've got, so you may as well enjoy it. There is the situation of life. Be happy for the work that you've got in front of you. That's the best that you can have. Eat, drink, find satisfaction in your toil. That's the gift of God, to be able to find satisfaction in this trivia. But yet, the indication that there is the eternal shows that there is something beyond time and that God's actions go beyond trivia, beyond this world. His actions endure forever. And so the tyranny that we are under is a terrible one. The perception that there is the good time, there is the right time, at first is something that seems marvellous. Here is real insight for me. Here is the indication that something exists in life that's more than just life. But yet, because I cannot fathom it out, because within the time system I'm living in, all I can see is that there is something beyond it, it becomes a terrible burden to me. But it's a burden that has been given by God, says our author in verse 10. Given by God in verse 11 for one reason, that we may revere, that we might fear, that we might worship God, that it might turn us back to God, that we realize our own mortality, our own short-termness, as we look to God, as we see that there is something beyond life than ourselves, we may indeed turn to him. We may seek after him, the indication of eternity, and of our inability to fathom it out, is a burden that is meant to lead us towards God. But yet here, in this world, even faced with the idea of justice, we come to another problem. Verse 16. I saw something else under the sun. And this is a very great problem for us, but it's still related to time. In fact, it heightens the problem of living in this time, perceiving there is an eternity. When I see that there's a timeliness about things, I see that there is a judgment that you can make. I can say, yeah, that is a fine action that man did. It was just the right thing for the situation. I can pass judgment. And so I look into this world for judgment. I call for fair play. I call for justice. I call for fair dealings amongst mankind, for my own self, for the self of other people. And when I look, what do I see? Wickedness and unfairness and injustice. So I whistle for the referee. And when I whistle for the referee, what kind of referee do I find? But a wicked one, and an unjust one, and an unfair one. I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. It's a little bit like that graffiti that was down at Central Railway for some time. The New South Wales police force is the best that money can buy. It's humorous, but it's horrible, isn't it? Please don't get me wrong on that. I'm not saying I subscribe to the view that that is the case. But I'm saying that if that is the case, it is a terrible situation to be in, isn't it? When the referees are corrupt, what chance have the players got? You've got a sense of justice, but when you need it, you're promised only one thing, injustice. And that is the way of the world, he says. And I thought in my head, aha, there is a greater justice. There is a greater judgment, the one that stands outside this world, the one of which I'm just getting the sense of. The God, he is the one who will bring in the justice of the world. God will bring to judgment both the righteous and the wicked. There will be a time for every activity, he says, verse 17. Time for every deed. God's justice will be timely. And then indeed, the perverted justice of this world will be found out and will be put right. When God will put all things right, but clearly God will put it right when he brings his judgment. And God has his time for judgment. And what is God's time for judgment? It comes to every man, all alike, righteous and wicked. Every one of us gets caught up in that great time of God's judgment. And what is that? But our own death. There is God's justice. There is God's calling all men to account. No one misses out, do they? There's nobody here who's sitting tonight thinking that they're going to miss out on the opportunity of death. I presume nobody thinks that. We're all going to face up to the judgment and to the justice of God. We're all going to face his time of testing, face to face with him, and so God tests all, he brings them all to an end. But if death comes to all, then we are no different to the beasts. I also thought, as for men, God tests them, verse 18, so that they may see that they are like the animals. Man's fate is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other, all of the same breath. Man has no advantage over the animals. We saw that also in the psalmist, didn't we? Who could say that we are just like the brute beasts in the end. A cow, born, breathes, goes around eating, has its offspring, gets old, dies. It's all just like Solomon Grundy. That's all that life is like. One short week passed and everything is meaningless. We breathe, they breathe. We die, they die. We are no more than the beasts of the field. But maybe there's life after death for us that is not for them. Maybe somehow we'll go up and they'll go down. Yes, he says, but maybe we'll go down and they'll go up. How do you know which way we're going? Maybe heaven is made for the animals and hell for mankind. God is eternal, but can we be? Or can we only perceive eternity? Are we really worse off than the beasts? They have eternity without knowing it. We know it exists, but don't have it. The tyranny of time is a terrible tyranny because it gives in me the sense that there is something beyond time. But when I call out for the justice to be done, I am condemned to death, to the end of time. And so he returns, verse 22, to enjoyable trivia. Eat, drink, work, enjoy this trivia. The common round, the daily task. Because nobody can see beyond the judgment. Nobody can tell you that there's anything else other than to live and to die. There is a famous student song, which is always sung in Latin. My Latin is rotten, so I've never understood what the song was until just very recently when I got an English translation of the opening of it. My Latin's so rotten that when I pronounce the opening few words, you'll grind your teeth and all the rest of it, and I'm sorry. But unless I tell you what it is, you won't know either. It's Gaudiamus Igitur, which I won't sing for you to your great relief, but it's a great drinking and student song which has been sung for centuries. Very ancient song. And I've burst along with everybody else in my day, going la 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 because I didn't able to sing the Latin words. Now I found the English words for the opening few lines. And those of you who can't translate Latin as you sing, let me share with you what it is you've been singing. Let us live then and be glad while young life's before us. After youthful pastimes had, after old age hard and sad, earth will slumber o'er us. That's a lovely line, isn't it? Isn't that wonderful sentiment? No wonder they keep it in Latin. But that is the sentiment here, you see. If all there is earth going to slumber o'er us, then you might as well enjoy it while you've got the vigour, because you won't even have that for very much longer. It's sapped away steadily, and there is no more. Indeed, enjoy your work. That's the lot that's been given to you. There's nothing else to it. Because who is it that can ever tell us of a judgment that goes beyond the death? Who is it that can rise from the tomb and tell us this is what it's like? Oh, that somebody would return from the grave. Oh, that somebody could come back and make clear God's judgment, could make eternity clear for us, that we may truly enjoy the life here, knowing that we would be set free from this tyranny of knowing about time beyond this world, knowing of justice beyond this world, knowing of eternity in our hearts, but knowing that we do not understand it and do not know where it comes from, where it's going to, except that we are going to be cut short out of it, that the tyranny is temporary because of our temporary life, but the temporary nature of this tyranny only makes it all that much worse because we're not going to survive. If somebody could come and make us free by making known to us eternity, it's all just like being in that maze. I know it's a meaningful maze, but I can't work out where the beginning is and I can't work out where the end is. All I know is that there is meaning somehow. And now that I've reflected on a while, I realise that I'm going to die in this maze. And that makes it even worse, because I know there's an outside where I'll be able to live, or I think I'll be able to live. And I just can't find the opening anywhere. And therefore, knowing that there is an outside only makes the being in it worse. And I'd rather not face up to that reality. And the timeliness of things is what shows me that there is the more outside, and what convicts me of the stupidity of being on the inside, and the hopelessness. I cannot leave you without making reference to the fact that the apostles of Jesus Christ claimed in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, for example, to make known to us a wisdom of God hidden from the ages, but of a very timely nature, because there is one who has not only lived in this maze, but died in it, and come back from the death to tell us of the eternal justice of God and to demonstrate to us the eternal justice of God. It's a wisdom that will never be worked out by people living in it here and now, because it's the wisdom of the ones who come from outside of it, namely Jesus. As long as you care to try and work it out from the inside, you never can. For there is no clear indication of where the beginning is, or where the end is, or how it will work out in judgment. But the man who comes from eternity can make it clear. And that man is Jesus.